Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not so fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
That felt the
manliness.
That felt good.
It felt so good that Dave, you had to start it over.
We made it through the warning, and I was like, I gotta go back.
I gotta
hear it again. First of all, I haven't heard it in a long time.
So the second one was like, no. This one's for me.
Yeah. No, it absolutely was for me. I mean, I hope if there are some people out there who need that warning, I hope it benefits them, but it was for me. I mean, they didn't hear it twice. We heard it twice.
Everybody else heard it three times.
But I encourage you on the podcast, go back.
Just go ahead and stop.
Just go ahead and start it over. Loop it back.
Let's go ahead and start the podcast back on. Over.
Yes. Because it's good. It's good.
It is good.
It's a throwback.
Yeah. When you're doing this for 10 years.
I know, man.
Deep tracks. Felt good, though.
Yeah.
Blessed Holy Week to you.
Thank you. And to you.
We're about to enter into, as of this recording, we're about to enter into Holy Triduum.
Indeed.
Which will be somber, but loved. Our friend Deacon Garlic, he had a homily last week. And it's on his Twitter feed. You can go, or X feed, whatever. You can go listen to it. But it was so good. He was talking about how, you know, a carpenter makes a table, not knowing who the table is for, not with that person in mind. But God makes you specifically with you in mind.
Yeah.
And has for all of eternity. And how, as we enter into Holy Triduum, to the holiest week of the year, this is a week of love.
I was actually there for that homily.
Oh, so no kidding!
I got to hear it. It was wonderful. He had to take it out, to take some of those parts out. But
what do you mean?
Well, because of some of the extra things in the liturgy. Mm. On Palm Sunday with mm-hmm. all the extra readings,
mm-hmm.
He was notified that he would have like 6 minutes.
Mm.
And so he had to pare it back a little bit, but it was a great homily. He started off by saying, you are a thought of God.
Mm-hmm.
You are a thought of God made flesh. Right. And just about the reality of reality. It was very interesting. He pointed out how you think of things because they exist,
mm-hmm.
whereas things exist because God thinks of them.
And if he stops thinking of them,
yes, then they will stop to exist. Yeah,
to exist.
Right. That even in the midst of your most heinous sin, God is loving you into and willing your existence, even at the moment of the utmost betrayal. Think about whoever the person is who has committed the most offensive sin. Like somebody holds that title,
yeah,
right?
Judas.
Possibly Judas. Yeah. He's a strong candidate. And, you know, whoever that person is, though, we pray that they're in heaven, that they repented, because repentance is 100% available to whoever that guy is, the worst person ever to exist. But even at that moment, God was still willing them into it and holding them in existence,
mm-hmm.
out of sheer love, even though they were sitting there twisting the knife at that moment, so to speak, God still loved them and willed for that person to go on existing.
Mm-hmm.
Even in that moment. It's not like he said, all right, these moments I actually don't will you to exist.
Right.
We'll pick back up here in about 10 seconds.
Right.
You know, that's after not
your,
what he did.
After your stupidity.
Yeah. No, he willed the existence of that person even in those moments.
That's
how profound his love is for us.
Hard to comprehend.
Yeah.
I don't know if I remember if I told this on the story on the podcast or not, but I had at least told you that, you know, Luke won tickets to a concert over the radio a radio station, local radio station here. He called in, and there was a trivia between him and another caller. So, you know, they would ask trivia, and he had to answer, and he did a fantastic job, and won, and won tickets. Well, we didn't realize it, but the tickets are for Good Friday.
Oh.
And when we realized it this last week, we said, Luke.
You can't go to a concert on Good Friday.
Luke, he goes, hey, Dad, when's that concert? And I go, this Friday, this coming Friday. Because I wanted to see what he would do. And he goes, like, Good Friday? And I go, yeah. He goes, well, we probably shouldn't go. And I was, like, super proud of him because I thought, like...
You'll have to buy him tickets to another...
To something else. But I was super proud of him that, like, that was his reaction. I was afraid it was going to be, like, he was going to say, like, well, after we go to Stations of the Cross, can we still make it?
Yeah.
But he...
Which, who could blame him?
Right.
Because has he been to a concert before?
I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably been to, like, performances, you know, something concert-like.
But not like a
but
music.
Not a real official concert, yeah.
But I was really proud of him for that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Way to go, Godson.
Yeah. Way to go, Luke. Mary is having a procedure done tomorrow in hopes of helping her get better. So that will be a hopefully a good procedure that will kind of expedite some of her growth.
Yes.
So regardless of what time you're listening to this, just offer up a prayer. God works outside of time.
He's outside of time. He can take your prayers and apply them to the right moment.
Right. So I'm grateful for that. And this episode is actually the reason why I wanted to talk about this is because it has directly affected my life recently. And so it made me stop and consider some things that I had not really considered or like pondered in a while. And I thought, well, if I'm struggling with this, maybe somebody else might be as well. Maybe somebody will find some.
I'm excited about talking about our subject today, our topic, because as I was reading over the notes, I was thinking to myself, oh, well, yeah, I'm totally this person. Oh, I'm totally, you know, I was raising my hand at a lot of points going, yep, that's me. Oh, that's me.
Yeah.
So, I think just about everybody is going to be
feeling that way.
Feeling that way. So, but I think hopefully it'll give us all something to really think about in the way we structure our household and our family.
Yeah. So we'll talk about the home today. It's really interesting that as I'm building a business, which I haven't really made public yet, but I'll go ahead and I can.
Well, the monkey's out of the bottle now, bro.
Yeah. So I have started a digital marketing agency called M6 Marketing. M for Minahan, 6 for 6 kids. People ask, like, why M6? That's the reason. Super creative. But M6
as creative as the Catholic Man Show.
As creative as the Catholic Man Show. But as I'm building a business, there is just so many parallels of building a business and building your home and how the duties that require me to be a husband and father and how I've kind of had to train myself over the last 12 years to be, you know, to be a father and over the last 14 years to be a husband, how much of that training has helped me in building a business. So I also just recently started a Substack not too long ago, which if you want to go check that out, you can just go to Substack and look up The Grounded Builder, where I talk about virtue and business and fatherhood and a little bit of homesteading. Just kind of, I do one article a week on Thursdays. They're released. And so go check that out.
Only yesterday, I found out what Substack was.
Only yesterday?
Only yesterday. And I had heard people talk about it. And I could tell by those conversations, contextual clues, which is something I'm very good at. Very contextual.
Is this kind of like one of those chapstick? Face chap?
It's like, I get the sense.
Snap face?
My senses are telling me, I don't want anything to do with that. And I was correct. Some people love it. People are way into it. Let me tell you what. There are things that are insanely popular that everybody loves. Good people. Real good people. That they love these things that I hate. Things like emails.
Mm-hmm.
Hate them.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the big one. Substack is sort of like an article in an email.
It's a blog.
Yeah, it's a blog, but it's sort of like more email-y blogs, even though it's articles. It's not emails.
Right.
I just can't do it.
I just hate it.
I just can't do it.
Turns out I have strong opinions.
Yeah, I don't want more emails. I don't want things that look like emails. But if you should go listen to Adam's Substack. Totally, I get
read.
But I don't want to do the
it's
thing
not
I'm doing.
Listen. You don't listen to it.
You
read
go
it.
Read it. Yeah. Go watch his Substack. A couple years ago, when Adam and I decided we wanted to lead our first pilgrimage, we asked around to find out who should we work with to help do this. And the thing we heard over and over again was Select International Tours. That's who you got to use. They're the best. Well, having used Select now, I can attest that they're incredible. No matter where it is you want to go in the world, Select has a tour ready for you. So whether you're interested in leading a pilgrimage or attending one, do yourself a favor and go to selectinternationaltours.com and take a look at everything they have to offer. You won't regret it. So I was at the gas station today, fueling up White Lightning. The
yes.
Beast.
For those who don't know what White Lightning is, can you just give a brief rundown of what...
What a beauty she is.
Those who have been to the campout...
If you have been to the campout, then you may have... you may have come to some intimate knowledge of White Lightning.
Poetic knowledge.
Poetic, yes. Poetic knowledge. That's exactly the knowledge I was thinking of. White Lightning is a... It's a work it's a magnificent work of creation. Came out of the year 1989. It's a real strong year. Oil prices were much lower than they are now.
Technology, though, the technology
fewer
market,
computers,
completely lower.
Completely different. In some ways, better.
It's much better, yeah.
In some ways, it was better. Okay, but there was a company called Chevrolet who produced a miraculous piece of equipment in that year. It was the...
It was like a rock.
Chevy Silverado. That's Ford.
No. Chevy was like a rock.
Chevy's like a rock?
Yeah. Built Ford Tough.
Ford Tough. Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. I have a 1989 white... Well, now it's white. Chevrolet. 1500. It's incredible. The thing's a workhorse. I know it's not supposed to haul the amount of that. Like today, I picked up over 2,000 pounds of feed. It's not supposed to haul that much, but she do. Okay, she just does. She doesn't complain about it.
You're gonna let another man tell you how much your steed can haul?
That's right. So I'm at the gas station, fueling her up on my way out. About, you know, embarking on this voyage. And this woman comes up to me and she says, I'm so sorry to bother you. can I ask you a question? Where did you get that truck? And the thing is about White Lightning, she's had some cosmetic, some might say upgrades, some might say this, okay? It's painted white. It's white. It's a white truck. If you just look like, at it,
would you say primer white?
If you just like from sort of a good distance, if you just look at it, be like it's a white truck. If you get closer, you realize, well, it's a white truck now, but it used to be a red truck. Okay, for instance, you know that little like air guard that's at the very front of the hood?
Mm-hmm.
That broke off like at some point recently, and so that part's red. They didn't take that part off to paint it. Okay. So, because it was tinted, you couldn't see
right
behind it. You know, it's sort of like nobody moves.
They didn't rattle can this either. They brushed painted.
Dude, yeah, exactly. So this woman, she comes up, she's like, "Where did you get that truck?" And I said, "Bristow? No, that's not it. It's someplace south of Tulsa." And she goes, "Was it Haskell?" And I was like, "Yes, Haskell." And she goes, "Oh, that was my father's. That was my dad's truck." And I was like, no kidding. And like, I looked at her and I was like, yeah, I kind of recognized her. And anyway, like when I went to go buy this truck from this old man, he was an old man, like couldn't hardly get out of his chair. He was, you know, there's a reason why he was getting selling his truck and stuff. And I ended up talking to him for about an hour, just, you know, chatting it up with this guy. I mean, sitting nearby in a street, given a really good price on it and just trying to be polite talking to the guy. So anyway, she's like, "Oh, he died a couple years ago." And I just can't, it just like totally touched this woman that.
Did you give her the truck?
No, I didn't give her the truck.
Dude, do you have even a heart?
Let
me chisel some of that ice from your heart to my whiskey glass.
No, I have to have this truck. It's my truck. I love this truck. Okay. And I told her that. It's like, oh, man, I could never part with this truck. I mean, we just kind of came up and she didn't ask me for it. Okay. But it was just such a serendipitous meeting. And like, it was a really great story. And it, you know, she took a picture with it. And she did.
It's her new profile pic on Facebook.
Yeah, I mean.
On Substack.
And the thing just, it's just a good piece of history.
Yeah. Well, I hope that thing lasts you for another 20 years.
I do too.
I hope you can pass. I hope that is Davey's first truck.
I have thought about that, and it's not safe, really. It doesn't stop very well. It has some. Look, she's got a lot of.
She's old.
She's got a lot of character.
Yeah.
But
she's experienced.
It is solid metal truck, you know.
Yeah. Well, very good. All right, let's jump into the topic.
Very good.
So we're going to talk about the home today and like how the home is supposed to form the domestic church, meaning your vocation, namely your wife and your children.
When you say the home, what all are you thinking about? What is all included in this? Obviously the house,
mm-hmm.
the physical building. Mm-hmm. What beyond that physical?
Everything inside of the home. And then your whole, like all of your property
mm-hmm.
and everything that, all the activities that go on in said property.
So the house and the accoutrements thereof, do the people count as part of the home?
Well, I think that the people, you can't have a home. You can have a house.
You can't have a home without people.
Yeah,
right.
You can have a house. There's a building. Mm-hmm. But like the home, like this is what, you know, they always say you give your wife a house and she makes it a home.
Yeah.
And the reason why it becomes a home is because there is love that enters into this place that creates a home.
Gotcha.
In fact, I was reading actually this essay by John Cutaback, Dr. John Cutaback, who we've had on our show. He's a good,
great guy.
He's a great person to. He's a great professor. He's a great Catholic man. He's a great husband, father. Somebody we look up to for sure.
Fantastic social media follow.
Yes.
Really. You know what? I'll bet that guy's got a Substack.
I bet he does.
I bet he has a better Substack than you do.
I bet he does. You're right. So there. So this. this episode is built upon kind of some of what I've been going through, but also I was reading this book called The American Catholic Land Movement, which I am going to strive to not make this a homesteading episode because there's a
who's
lot
that
of guys.
By?
It's edited by Jason Craig and Jared
okay.
Stout.
Yeah.
But it has...
That's an older book, though, isn't
no,
it?
No. No, they just put it together.
Okay.
It actually just came out by Tan. And it's a whole host of different essays by, you know, Dr. Jared Stout, Dr. Alan Harrelson, who we've had on the show. Father Francis Bethel from Clear Creek.
Yeah.
Jason Craig and John Cutterback. Anyway, so I was reading this essay that John Cutterback wrote on the... spiritually motivated homesteading, an answer to the 21st century. He's talking about the home, and he said the household that springs from a marriage naturally exemplifies truths of human nature. Put otherwise, the household has a kind of body and soul. The body is a very incarnate daily life. The soul is the pursuit of the spiritual, moral, and intellectual human perfections, all under the operation of grace.
Beautiful.
And so a lot of what we'll talk about tonight is pulling actually from some of this. We're not going to use, because he's making the example of how the homestead is and moving out into like land, the benefits and some of the spiritual warnings that he gives for moving out there and what the purposes of this would be. But so he talks about how the home should be four things. It should be conducive to marriage.
Yes.
It should be conducive to raising children.
Okay.
It should have a positive moral influence on all involved.
Yes.
And it should offer religious and liturgical formation.
Okay.
And that's what the home should encompass. Now he's bringing this into, like I said, a homestead, but I think it you can actually take the homestead aspect of this out. And so he says, what is your household actually designed to produce, and how do we run the household? And there's this, you know, kind of test that you can give. It says, if a stranger walked into your home for a week and just watched your daily rhythms, what would they say about how your household was designed to produce?
And by household, once again, we're talking about just the traditions you have as a family, as well as like the physical house itself. But it sounds more here like he's really getting at What are your family traditions?
The home has a body and soul composite, right? So the body, or like that, this is the analogy that he gives, right? The kind of a body soul composite. The body is the daily life, and then the soul is the moral, intellectual, and spiritual formation that takes place in the daily life.
Okay.
And so, it reminded me of like three signs. So he says there's three signs of a household that runs well. Here, and we're about on a break, so I don't want to start them yet. But he goes through this understanding of like, okay, if somebody is watching your household, how would they in your daily life? What would they say about it? Mm-hmm. And he gives examples of how would they say your Sunday morning looks? How would they say your everyday morning looks, your night looks? What would be the obvious glaring points of, hey, you're like, this is completely dysfunctional?
I think they might say, I cannot believe he pulled that off.
Right. So, to bring kind of the analogy of business into this, you know, there's always the talk of working in the business or working on the business, right?
Yeah.
So, you can work on your daily tasks that you have to get accomplished within the business. And a lot of times, especially as an entrepreneur or the owner of a company, it's very easy to get sucked into just the daily tasks that you have to do in the business and not work on the business.
Yeah.
Meaning like the standard operating procedures that you have to put in place. How, like, what are the goals? Are we actually moving towards the goals? Are we not moving towards the goals? Like, we are working on the way in which the business can be run versus
trying to make all the sales calls,
which
you can't do,
and everything else, implementation, everything else. And so again, so there's a lot of times I think as husbands and fathers, we could be working in the family, but not on the family. We can be doing the things that we're supposed to do in the day-to-day life, like making sure we're getting them to school on time, making sure they're going to dance class, making sure we're, you know, doing all the things that we have set up to do in life, but then not working kind of on life or on our family.
Yeah.
And so he says there's three signs a household is running on willpower instead of design. So this is kind of where...
This is when I read this part earlier in your notes, this is where I was going, like, yeah, this is me.
Right.
This is me. But I also thought this is probably everybody.
You think so? Yeah. Yeah. Maybe so. I'm going to pull this up on my phone because for whatever reason, this printed off is super small and my eyes.
Yeah. Your printer was trying some new things today.
Yeah. It was very interesting. I was, okay. So willpower instead of the design of the house, right? Because you want to have the design of your home needs to be functioning correctly, to where things are moving, even the systems are set in place, I guess.
Do you have it? I can read it if you want me to read it.
Yeah, go ahead.
So number one is the same corrections keep happening. You're saying the same thing to the same kids about the same situations. Nothing is sticking. That might not be a motivation problem, but a design problem.
Right. Okay. So here's where it kind of gets into my day-to-day life, right? Like, so right now, our all of our systems and processes that I have set up for our family, that Haley and I have set up for our family, are incomplete. They're completely out the window.
Yeah.
Because Haley or I and or I...
Your whole household is like in different places.
Right. Is at the hospital 2 hours away. So regardless of who is at the home, it's almost like we're kind of single parenting it, right? So we're both duties of both husband and wife, regardless of who's here. And I don't normally have to get the kids ready for school in the morning. Like, that's just not like what I normally do.
Sure.
I'm normally gone to work.
Yeah.
And so I was learning I'm learning the routines of the morning, and it just felt like I am just butting my head up against the wall every single day, like telling the same kids to do the same things over and over and over. Why are we not like... Why is this not clicking? You know, why are they not motivated to do this? Why are we not like doing the thing we're supposed to do to get ready to get out of the van so we're not running late to school?
Mm-hmm. Turns out kids really don't care about being late to school.
No,
not really.
No. But it made me realize that, I'm not preparing them to succeed. I'm not setting them up for success. Because I didn't know that, you know, Haley had a system and routine the night before to get them ready to where when they woke up, there were things already in motion.
Dad hack. You have them sleep in their uniform.
In their uniform.
Give them a clean uniform.
Before bed. Okay. These are your pajamas.
These are clean clothes. These are your pajamas for the morning, for tonight. Bonus, you can wear your pajamas to school.
Caveat. Not while we're potty training.
Caveat, not.
So anyway, I realized...
Yes.
Yeah.
Not a perfect system. Okay. Yeah.
But so I realized I was not like setting my kids up for success, right? Like the process wasn't in place. And so it made me realize that I'm sitting here saying the same thing to the same kid every single morning.
Yeah.
Why is it not clicking? And then I realized, it's because I wasn't setting them up for success. It wasn't because they didn't want to do the right thing. It's that I wasn't helping them move their will towards the right thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So
which is, this is very helpful in some things. There are other things that you might have. You know, there's just some things about raising kids, like my son. You know, I don't know how many times we've had to go through the discipline process because we don't hit girls. Okay, there's nothing systematically I can do to set him up here. We have a lot of girls, all right? It's a target-rich environment around my house, okay? But there are a lot of things like you're talking about here where you can, hey, we can change the way we are thinking about these things. Getting ready for school is a great one. But also, there's probably more important things that you could apply this to, like prayer life for your kids, or, you know,
dinner time. How yes, we sit at the dinner table.
Exactly right. Like things that would promote peace in the family.
That's right. Which is really kind of the number two, because that was actually kind of the example. It's like morning chaos. You know, the shoes are missing. The kids are dragging and like not moving fast. Nothing was built right the night before to make the morning smooth.
Right. Yeah.
And so you can work in the family, meaning like get those things done every single morning, or you can work on the family where it's like, okay, if that's the case, then we need to set our shoes out the night before. We need to have our you know, uniform ready to go. You do the things and create kind of systems and processes, so to speak, for the family so that way they can succeed.
Number three, so this is sort of just commenting on the first two, is that your presence is the only thing holding it together. When you are around, things work. When you're traveling or gone, everything slips. A household that depends on the man's constant presence has not been well built. It has been managed.
Right. And I think that's, you know, that is a key factor, right? It's like, it's like, okay, when I'm gone, why is it that everything is falling apart? And that's a disservice also to your wife, right? Because when you are gone, then she's having to bear the brunt of all of that, because you haven't set it up to where you and her haven't set it up to where when one of you are gone, things will still run smoothly.
You know what? When things really fall apart is when my wife is gone.
When she's gone,
I mean, I know, I don't need to tell you that, bro.
Yeah. this has been my life.
Yeah. I mean, that's when the wheels have fallen off the rudder.
And you're in survival mode.
Like
a great
whale ripped the rudder off the ship.
Yeah.
We are adrift with the engine stuck on full throttle. We don't know
where we are going, what we're doing.
We cannot change directions.
Yeah. So Kettleback talks about how the household should be well-suited to serve the ends of marriage and the Christian perfection of all members. And so that made me think about, like, okay, so it's not comfortable, it's not convenient, but it's suited for perfection. Okay, and then also, like, it's well-suited to serve the ends of marriage. Okay, so what do you think that means? Like, what are the ends of marriage?
Yeah, so I kind of think that those are the same thing, that suited to perfection, or, like, the telos of something, mm-hmm. the end of something, is often translated in the Bible as, you know, when it says be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect, it's this word, telos. And that just means that what is its purpose? What is its end? And so I would say that something that is well suited for its ends in this case is that we are preparing to get to heaven, right? So that we're training, we're doing Christian training that we might build on virtues, learn how to gain self-mastery over ourselves, identify vices within our, you know, so we have order, we have systems of discipline, we have rewards and consequences that are systematic within the household, whether by rule or by natural occurrence, you know. So,
but it's not like you could put on the calendar, you can't just put on the calendar, like, what am I going to do today? I'm going to raise my kids.
Right.
And then, like, at the end of the day, you say, like, well, I raised my kids.
You can put it on the calendar, but...
But that's not how... How do you raise your kids? You raise your kids by coming together and them watching what you do.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to look at you and say, like, okay, this is how it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And it's not a one-time thing. You can't just say, okay, I'm going to go raise my kids today. We're going to go do something together today. And then that's the end. And then, oh, I raised my kids. This is just like the virtue, like building a habit of ordering towards the good, that like building a habit isn't just being truthful, isn't something you like, oh, I told the truth once today, so I have the habit of telling the truth. I have the virtue of telling the truth. It's no, this is a constant thing that you have to do, you know, to build the virtue day in and day out.
I think maybe the way that I'm thinking about this is that we want our household to be set up in such a way so that choosing the good is the only conceivable option.
I mean, that would be, I mean, that, yeah.
Right.
I mean, that, so this is part of the establishing of a fatherhood, right?
You know, right.
So you protect, you provide, and you establish. And establishing your children mean that you're not the one having to tell them what is good, mm-hmm. that you have ordered their appetites in such a way that they only desire that which is
good. At some point,
good.
In the beginning, you will be telling them, giving them no choices. Right. But but we need to have it set up so that it's the only conceivable option. At some point, we can't even imagine doing anything that isn't the good.
Right.
We're talking about a well-ordered home, what it means to have a well-ordered home, the things that it takes to have a home well-ordered, which ultimately comes down to structures, processes that govern our own behaviors, and whether that's for the adults, for the children, right? It's very much the same as governing our own appetites in the pursuit of virtue. Mm-hmm. We need to have rules for ourselves. We need to set up, if we're constantly failing, okay, well, maybe I need a system in place that's going to help me avoid the near occasion of sin. Right. Maybe I just need to make sure I don't even get close, right? So there, you know, you can, it's a, there's a lot of similarities mm-hmm. between that and pursuing virtue as a family.
Yeah, and to kind of go back to what are the four things, you know, within a household, like it has to be conducive for matrimony, meaning that it has to be a place in which your vocation to your wife flourishes. So there has to be space in which the love between the husband and the wife can flourish, meaning doing things together, coordinating like activities together, doing things as husband and wife.
Yeah.
And that love that you build there, the fruit of that is children, is order towards children and raising the children. And so then you have to have order within the family now. That love becomes so real that you have to give the love a name, right? And the order of or the purpose of marriage is for heaven, but raising children that will worship our Lord. And so it has to be, the house has to be a moral high ground for them, an instruction manual, so to speak, of how to order your life from an intellectual perspective, from a moral perspective, from a spiritual perspective. And then ultimately, those things will give you a well-ordered home and provide you with opportunities to have, like, to give a religious formation or a liturgical formation, because what you see in at Mass on Sundays should form you in how you live your life in the home.
And the way you live your life should prepare you for what you see at Mass on, you know, it goes right back and forth. So, Adam, I think that order, harmony, peace, order. Did I say order already?
Mm-hmm.
It's so important. I want to say it twice.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big ways that we do this as a family are when we do things together. Okay. When we have these moments of, commonality. Okay. So I'm thinking of, like, in my family, we try to pray the Angelus,
mm-hmm.
Every day. And, you know, I'm not home for a lot of that. But when I am home, we, you know, we all pray together, but we all stop what we're doing to come together and do this communal act.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so, when we're talking about systems for something like this, whether it's the dinner table, getting ready for school, I mean, you pick what it is. There needs to be, and I think one way that we can bring order and beauty to these communal acts are, how is it that we summon each other? What is it that we do to call each other to these acts? Because I think that people don't give this enough thought. I mean, here's let me describe a situation that happens in my house. We try not to do this, but I think happens in a lot of households. You want the kids to come down to pray the Angelus. What do? You go to the stairs and you yell, "Kids, come down to pray.
Get your tails down here."
You know, and it's a little bit ironic that, you know, we're
a little too ironic.
Yeah,
don't
we're
you
trying
think?
To build peace with this act of communal liturgy, sort of, and like worship, and we started off yelling. Okay, one of the things that we do in our house, which we love, is we ring bells for things. Okay, so we have bells all over the house. We have a bell on the back porch. I know you guys.
Catholic hack, also get your bell blessed.
Okay, I was going to say this.
Okay, good. Sorry, I didn't
so
mean to.
So if you get your bell blessed, just like if you bless your home with holy water or holy salt, I shouldn't say just like it, it's not exactly the same, but when you ring a blessed bell, it's actually using a sacramental.
Yeah.
And
the demons of the air hate it.
Yes. Okay, so it's like blessing your house. You could say it's like blessing your house with holy water. It's similar in some ways. So, but also there's a beauty in the, especially like get a beautiful sounding bell, because not only does it some, you know, so when we ring the bell, the kids know, come down, right? It either means dinner, we ring it for everything. Dinner's ready, come down for prayer. I mean, it just means come here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much better than yelling. Okay. So this is a great example of a system that we have in our house that actually brings more peace, because the ringing of a bell is inherently lovely. And it's a great way to start something like praying the Angelus or having dinner together, which is itself a liturgy. And it really sets the right tone for all of these things. And it just adds beauty to your house. I have actually decided, Lady Pamela and I, that if we ever build a house, I'm going to have a bell system built into my house where I could pull a...
I thought you were going to say a bell tower.
No. Dude, that a bell tower.
Did you
I feel like
that
would be a little ostentatious. Is that a word? Is ostentatious a word? Could be ostentatious, bro. Like
why don't you tell me what you think that means?
Where you think like too highly of your, it's like you think it's
pretentious,
overly important for what you have. Like, I don't have a chapel, okay? I don't know. That's what I'm thinking. If it's not a word, I have now christened. I'm pretty sure it's a word, but I might be getting its meaning wrong. Anyway, but having a system of bells in the house, I'm totally gonna do it. If I ever build a house, don't know that I ever will, but monks, you know, monasteries do this all the time. It's a regular, essential part of the life of a monastery.
Mm-hmm.
Is ordered towards the bell.
Yep.
Something you can easily do in your own home.
And they always have times of gathering together, and that's gets tougher and tougher as your kids get older, and you know, even if you're a grandfather or grandparent, you know, and you're trying to, you know, order times with your kids. It's tough to do things together. It's easy to be together. It's tough to do things together. Meaning, like, it's easy to just sit in a room with a bunch of people and you're all watching TV or you're on your phone.
The game's on.
It's easy to do that. It's tough to be, like, to actually be doing things together.
Yeah.
And those are the things that I think are, that's the incarnational aspect of the home. Right, that's the body part of the home. So there's three questions to ask if something keeps breaking in the home. So if you keep you're banging your head up against the wall, why is this not working? As I have done quite often. One of them is, what part of this depended on someone remembering instead of a structure prompting? So kind of like what you said with the Angelus, like we hope to pray the Angelus every day if everybody remembers, or is it that there's a bell that goes off mm-hmm. at 3 o'clock or at noon, at 6, noon and 6. And when those bells go off, we all know, oh, this is time for prayer. This is why I always have on my phone. I started doing this, you know, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 years ago. That at 3 o'clock every day, my phone alarm goes off.
Yeah.
Just to remind me that this is the time in which Christ died for me. And I try to pray. I don't typically get a chance to pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, but I pray the Divine Mercy Prayer, you know, at least stop just for a minute to pray.
Even just stopping and elevating your mind briefly has tremendous spiritual power.
Right. Then another one is, like, does every person in the household know what is expected of them and when? That's another big thing. Like, you know, the catechism.
This one is huge. That's so huge.
Because a lot of times as parents, we expect our kids to know, they should know to do this. But this is what Catechism 2223 talks about when building a home, the domestic church, that we should order our children towards disinterested service. Mm-hmm. They should always be thinking about, which is very difficult because it's difficult for adults, but to be serving one another without the interest of either accolades or attaboys or anything like that, but just in a service to the family out of love.
Yeah.
And what is the smallest change of the daily structure that would make the right behavior the more obvious behavior? And this is kind of what you were talking about, right, earlier, is that you want them to conceive, have the conceived notion of, like,
the good is the only conceivable choice.
Yeah, exactly.
But I like here what this says about what is the smallest change, because obviously there are changes you could make. There's a lot of changes you could make. It's like, hey, we have this problem in the family, whether it's behavioral or what. But I like how this rule attempts to do it with the smallest change.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I think that's a really wise diagnostic advice.
And I know we're about out of time on Catholic Radio, and I know we've been using a lot of analogies and a lot of, like, even business language, systems and processes and SOPs and all this stuff. That analogy falls flat when it comes to the home, as all analogies fall flat at some point, because business is ordered towards efficiency and effectiveness. The home is ordered towards love, not efficient and effectiveness. That is a huge difference between home and the business, and the home should be ordered towards love. So we're going to continue this, give examples of the ordered household. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
Raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus. So, Adam, we have a book. We wrote a book.
We did. I kind of forget that sometimes.
Yeah, we wrote a book. Making Your Home a...
Yeah,
Living Beyond Sunday, Making Your Home a Holy Place. And one of the chapters that we have in that book is all about, literally it's about the rooms of the home.
Mm-hmm.
And I would recommend people to go and read that chapter, because I think it gives a lot of insight into what is the purpose? What ought we to be doing with mm-hmm. our household?
Mm-hmm.
We have a room for something. Why do we do that? Why have we chosen... Why have we decided to make this particular thing sacred by setting apart a room for where this is the only thing? But the point I want to get to is how every room of the house is actually ordered towards a biological need of the body, except for one. So you've got the bathroom, that one's obvious. The bedroom is where you're sleeping. The dining room is for eating. So the only one is the living room. Not ordered towards a biological need of the body. The living room itself is the best room, because it's the one ordered towards the person and not towards the body. Okay, we need, obviously we have these other things that we need, but the living room alone is the one who says, you are so good. I want a place in this house that I have set apart just to be with you. Okay, just the very being with you is so good. I want to make that sacred by setting apart a room in my house, the best room, usually the central room, mm-hmm. just to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by just kind of like thinking about how the room, how our house is laid out, how our household is ordered, we can better adapt ourselves and have systems that kind of realize, oh yes, just this very being together, kind of like what you were talking about earlier, it's hard sometimes to be together, that it's so important and it's essential, and it's, we have to pursue it intentionally. That's why otherwise, what have we been talking about? Kind of the whole idea is a silly one. Okay, well, if this isn't something that we should put effort and thought into, then it doesn't matter. But it does, right? So this is the family. This is what we're supposed to do. It's being together. That's when we learn how to be virtuous from it. You know, that's when our children learn from us. That's when we learn to be merciful. That's, you know, all of the things that are great about family life.
Learn to be merciful.
Yes.
Yeah. So here's some examples of an ordered house and something maybe that I've been reflecting on. And I think for the guys who don't have a family yet, who are starting their family, something to strive towards, or guys of our age that have families that may be good to reevaluate, you know, make sure that they're doing, as I think constantly you have to be this is why the importance of examination of conscience on a daily basis, right, is so that we can understand and know yourself and know where you're falling. Just like it's important to kind of like reevaluate like your family life. What's going on here? Where are we falling? Where are we falling flat? Why are we falling flat? How could we be better together as a family? And these aren't like exhaustive, but these are just some that I think would be good. Is like having a rule for the day. And it doesn't mean like for each particular day you have a different rule or something like that. But like you have a great example of the great silence in the morning. Like what happens, like what is supposed to happen when we wake up in the morning? What is supposed to happen after the kids get home from school from the day? What is supposed to happen when dad gets home from work at the day? What is supposed to happen before we go sit down at the dinner table together? What's supposed to happen before prayer time at night? Like these, having rules before big events that you do as a family is helping them prepare and understand what is expected of them and why. And eventually, someday, they will come to appreciate that, knowing that, hey, this was important to my dad and to my mom. Why was it important? Oh, it was because we needed to, like, these things were the fabric of building our family. Yeah. Like, this is what being a family really is. Mm-hmm.
And you need to have these rules for yourself personally as well. The rules you absolutely. Have for your family ought to be an outpouring or an extension of the rules. You know, like if I had a rule, like we do have a rule that our kids pray in the morning. That would be, I don't know, insulting if I didn't have a rule for myself that mm-hmm. I also pray in the morning, right? And that it would be totally counterproductive in the end
mm-hmm.
for what I want that rule, you know. And so for people who don't know, I've talked about it many times, but for people who don't know, we have a rule, we call it the Great Silence. It's not a name that we came up with ourselves, but monasteries have the Great Silence. Every morning, this is every day, we have silence until 8 o'clock, at which time we recite Psalm 51, O Lord, open my lips, and my mouth shall proclaim thy praise. The idea here is that we want to create a space for prayer. So in the morning, if you're 7, you will pray quietly for 7 minutes. If you're 10, you'll pray for 10 minutes. If you're mom or dad, you pray for an hour. And we want to cultivate on the one hand, the natural habits of virtue of silence, the natural virtues of silence, I have no, I'm not like illusion. I don't think that my 5-year-old is actually spending time in contemplative prayer. I know he isn't actually. I'm 100% certain that he isn't. However, he is having on a natural level, he's learning to be quiet and sit still for 5 minutes. And I know that someday, and this is what I'm preparing my children for, that someday the Lord will speak to their heart for the very first time. I don't know if you remember that moment for you. I don't know that I remember it for me, but I might. I have a memory. I don't know that where I really felt the Lord speaking to me. I don't know if it was the very first time, but it was a very significant moment for me. Well, but it will happen. He will call their name in a moment of silence for the first time, and they will have this like moment of awakening where they say, right? And they recognize the voice of the Lord. And I just want to prepare them to be ready to hear and to receive that moment of prayer. So this is a great example of a system that we have in our house. And so we have the great silence every morning, which bleeds out. It goes beyond just this prayer time because they come down. They're expected to pray first. You don't get to eat breakfast unless you have prayed and done your chores. Your chores are also done in silence. It's supposed to be an extension of your prayer, right? That this is almost an act of piety towards the family. That this is what we owe, and it's done in service to our Lord. Okay, so it's been great for me because I can't tell you how many times I've put something like this in place for my kids, and I know that I have benefited the most from it. Like, you know, it's like, oh man, this is such a great pious practice. I would never do it if I didn't have kids because I think it's silly. Except once I do it, I realize that like, I'm a fool. Here I think I'm like so mature. And the things that have impacted me the most are the things, these like simple, basic things that I think I'm doing for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Really, and I'm just a fool because I think I'm beyond them or something, you know, and I'm just not.
It brings you more childlike.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's a great system that we have for, I totally forgot where we were before this, what brought me on to talking
rule.
About the,
yeah, yeah. Just having a rule.
But, it's a great rule. I know I talk about it all the time. If you listen to our podcast for long enough, he's like, Dave, I've heard you talk about this 100 times. It's just made such a big and profound impact on our family life. I just really want to share it with people. And it's so simple. It's not hard to do. It might be hard for you to convince your kids to at first. It wasn't for me because they had already seen me at prayer every morning. So when I brought it up with them at dinner one day, I said, kids, we're getting an upgrade as a family. We're getting a family upgrade. We are going to start doing the great silence. And they were like, what's that? You know, and
it's a great sales pitch.
Yeah. And I said, it starts in a week from now, but we're going to start practicing tomorrow. That's what I said. You know, it's like, hey, because if in a week from today, it was going to be a rule.
Yeah.
But we're going to start practicing. We're going to start practicing.
Yeah.
You're not going to be in trouble, okay? Because we're going to need some time to adjust. Like, yeah. I understand we have not been doing this. It's hard. I'll make mistakes too, right? So that's what I did. It was very well received. Try it, you know?
Another one is giving your kids real work and not like real work that has consequences if they don't do it. And this is why.
This is something I think you're great at. I think you're really great at this.
Oh, thank you. I've tried to hold off the homestead pitch, you know, up until now.
We made it
a long time.
The restraint.
I mean, the virtue.
Impressive. It's
the
impressive.
Virtue. Yeah. But having a homestead, the reason why there's so many natural needs in the homestead that has that have to happen, and if they don't happen, real consequences happen. Namely, the garden doesn't grow.
Animals go hungry.
Animals die.
Yeah,
you know, like death occurs, it's like
widespread death.
Yeah, I mean, there's real consequences.
Right, entire species might get wiped out on the farm.
Plagues. but there, like you know, firewood has to be split. You know, like things have to be done, and if they don't, like there are real consequences to it. Like if your kid, their job is to sweep the floor. Is there a real consequence to not sweeping the floor? At some point, there will be, right? Like,
but it's only,
but it's very livable.
Like, the worst it ever gets is just like super annoying,
right? But it's not like so. There's real consequences, and when you give them real responsibilities, it creates this understanding of the disinterested service that we were talking about earlier. Of this need of like, no, in order for this unit to work. Namely the family to work. I have to do this, not because I want dad to be proud of me or mom to be proud of me, but that I have ownership in the family to mm-hmm. do this.
Yeah.
And so I think that giving your kids real chores with real responsibilities that have real consequences create an atmosphere where they will choose to do that, not to be praised, but out of the love of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, that also flows out of them seeing you.
You do it.
With, you know, yeah.
And that's not something that happens overnight either. That's something you have to like.
Sure.
Okay, so also we've talked about like, it's easy to be in the same room with some people. It's hard to spend life together. And that's why we have to cultivate a time in which the family comes together to spend time together. I think the easiest one is the dinner table.
Yeah.
I think it's also the one that gets most attacked in the family life because it is the hardest to guard versus kids going to different sporting events or different other extracurricular activities and all the things that happen in the evening times throughout the week.
Yeah.
And it's easy to say, okay, we'll just go pick up Brahms or Sonic on the way, eat really fast in the car so that way we can make it to this thing on time. And sometimes that's not, I mean, that's
sometimes
just
that's the way it works out.
Just,
yeah.
That's just what you have to do.
Yeah.
But when that happens, you have to be aware of, I need to create another time if it's not the dinner
sure.
table. For us all to spend yeah. at least a little time together.
But as I was saying, as a rule, you ought to be sitting down together.
And eat.
To eat, right? And so I grew up in a house where we always ate dinner together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you did too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so foreign to me, the idea of not eating dinner together. But I know that not every family is like that. Gosh, I just think that this has to be a priority. I think,
and the priority will require sacrifices, and sacrifices in which you feel like that aren't worthy of the sacrifice.
I totally agree. I can absolutely envision myself having grown up differently with different. I know myself well enough that I would be totally into watching television at dinner every day. I could absolutely see myself being all about that. If that's the way I grew up, yes. Because I just know myself, right? And if I was talking to that version of myself, it would take a Herculean effort. And I'd have to be really convinced that I ought to discipline myself in order to do, you know, to turn the TV off, sit down. But this is what I think the rules ought to be. Absolutely no screens
mm-hmm.
at all. No phones, no television, no nothing. That goes for you too. I mean, all the parents.
Of course.
Absolutely from the kids. They need, you guys need to be together. People need to be together. And so if this is something that you've made a habit of doing, I would really just encourage you to stop and make dinner together an absolute, it's a non-negotiable.
Yeah.
I say it's non-negotiable, except when there are just sometimes it's just absolutely not going to happen.
At least,
yeah. But that should be a rare occurrence, ideally.
Yeah. The last one is having developments the night before. I've heard Father Mike Schmitz talk about all the time. It's not actually easy. It's not actually hard to wake up early. It's hard to go to bed.
Yeah.
Early, and on time. And so how we prepare ourselves on Saturday nights as we prepare for Holy Mass on Sunday, there should be almost a ritual in which we go through to prepare ourselves, especially during this Holy Week, right? Like, what does it look like on Friday, Good Friday? Like, what are we doing? How are we preparing ourselves for Easter Sunday? And building out and creating space in the home to prepare ourselves for the next day. Because the household is a primary school. It's the first school that your kids go through. And so if there's chaos in the home, that's what they're going to know. They're going to understand chaos. It's true, right? I mean, like, yeah. we have a good buddy who, you know, when he was first raising his kids, we would go over there and we'd be like, dude, what is going on? Everything is going crazy over here. And he was like, well, you know, this is just normal. This is what we do. And it's like, well, your kids are just getting accustomed to being like crazy is the normal. And that can't be how we raise our children. That can't be how you order your home. And that ultimately falls on the husband in communion with his wife.
Yeah, so I ultimately think that everything we've talked about is really the man's domain and responsibility. I just think men, generally speaking, are so much better at this big picture stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a great example of this is you get together in a group of couples. The women are over there talking about things. The men are over here talking about things. What are the women talking about?
People.
People. So if you imagine like your circles, like the women are talking about everybody inside of their circle and men are talking about everything outside of their circle. The women are over there talking about the babies who have been born, the people, and the men are over there talking about policies, conflicts, wars, like everything that has nothing to do with the people inside of their circle, right? Right. And that's because we are just naturally oriented towards these big picture things, right? Mm-hmm. Policy arrangements. This is one of the gifts. This is one of our masculine gifts. And so this is really something that us as men, we need to take ownership of. And it's our responsibility. This is one of the things, the essential jobs that we ought to be fulfilling in the household for the sake of our families.
And all ordered in love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Authority is granted to us not for our own sake, but for the sake of those over which we exercise the authority.
That's right. The grace that we receive as fathers and as husbands is so that we can receive them, so that we may give them
right
to our family.
So that we might serve them more effectively.
Right. I have a lot of work to do.
Praise be Jesus Christ.